So welcome everybody to a pre-Nokia World special All About Symbian Insight number 85. I have with me Mr. Rafe Blandford.
Hello everybody.
And Mr. Ewan Spence.
Hello!
Is it true you were up late last night with seven Disney princesses, Ewan?
No. One of them had to go to bed early, and Tinkerbell isn't actually one of the princesses. She's a fairy, so it was only five of them. But yes.
And that's your surreal Mr. Spence moment for the podcast. And moving on with Symbian and mobile matters. Brand new news. It's been a big week, really. Nokia, I think, had determined quite rightly to eke out the news cycle and news coverage of their products. And rather than do everything on one day and get it all over and done with, they've managed to rather expertly leak out and announce news over an entire week. And this is before Nokia World has even started. But can we go through the week in chronological order, guys? Is that going to be too confusing?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Even though some of it's non-Symbian stuff, I think it's of interest to our audience today.
Okay.
And I think it's fair to point out that quite a lot of this stuff impacts on the Symbian ecosystem in a very positive way as well, even if it's not using our favourite operating system and kernel inside the machines.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've also got some reader questions sent in, which would make sense to ask at the appropriate points. But the first thing that was announced last week, as you listen to this podcast, the Nokia Booklet 3G, a mini laptop. Nokia aren't calling it a netbook on purpose, but Ewan has other ideas.
It's a netbook, N-E-T-B-O-O-K. It's a netbook.
But it's got a GPS in it, and it's got HDMI out. That means it's not a netbook anymore.
Yeah, I think. What about a Netbook Plus?
Netbook Plus, I'll settle for that.
All right, 12-hour battery life, which I have to admit, I don't quite believe. But that's the claim. HSDPA downloading, Wi-Fi, of course. HDMI port, which is some sort of a high-res video out. A 10-inch glass HD-ready display. Assisted GPS, and same way that smartphones do, getting data from the internet to enhance accuracy. It weighs 1.2 kilograms and is 2 centimeters thick, and it looks pretty darn sexy. Ewan, you are the netbook expert in the All About Symbian family. What was your take on the Booklet 3G?
Well, apart from, look, everybody's going to call it a netbook. The legal case is resolved with Scion. Ka-ching! So just go ahead and call it because you're wasting good SEO. I think it's real. What was impressive is that not only did it catch the PR cycle, and everybody online saw this and just went, oh, we want that. And to be honest, and this is crazy, it replicated an Apple launch. All of a sudden, everybody went, look at that, I want it. And I think if Nokia had an order page to take pre-orders, they probably would have had a significant amount of money. There's two ways you can look at this netbook. It's either the last netbook in the first generation of stuff, because they've been around for a fair bit now, or it's the first netbook in the second generation. And having some distance on the announcement, I'm tempted to go with the latter. The removal of a VGA and putting on an HDMI port is an obvious move up, in the same way that we eventually lost parallel ports and COM ports and computers. We've now lost a VGA port and going to something that can deliver a much better resolution and a much faster sync rate. And you can get HDMI to VGA for old projectors. The fact that it is a larger screen, most netbooks run at about 1,000-odd pixels wide. This is running at, I think we're suspecting, 1280 pixels on this one?
Yeah, something like that, maybe a little more. I mean, HD ready presumably means it's probably just over HD resolution.
Indeed. So it is a larger screen, and the screen estate on the netbooks is one of the things that has actually made them better. The first ones that came out at 800 by 480, I know Steve had some experience with the Asus 701.
A 7-inch screen, it was awful.
Yeah,
tiny little thing.
The 9-inch screens are nice, but this 10-inch with the extra pixels, I think, is going to be wonderful. It's fashionable. It's machined from a single block of aluminium, so it looks impressive. And yes, it's got Windows 7, and I know there's going to be a lot of people wishing that they would be simple thinking, why didn't Nokia put Linux on it? Because they've got MIMO. We'll come to MIMO in a moment, but the bottom line is they've went with a processor that's been proven in the netbook system, which is the Intel Atom, and MIMO's not been programmed for that type of CPU. It's been programmed for the ARM chipset.
Yeah, and it's more complicated than that, Ewan. I mean,
indeed,
people talk about how they want Linux on the netbook, and that's absolutely fine, but in sales terms, they just haven't done as well. And this is indeed a controversial statement, but essentially people are more familiar with Windows and prefer that on their laptops. For MIMO, which we're going to obviously be discussing more later, It's actually more complicated than just the process, although some of the hardware is down to that as well. I mean, it's MIMO is designed to run on the Cortex A8 processors, but it's also down to the fact that MIMO is about making mobile devices with computing-like characteristics, but that are pocketable, and by any stretch of the imagination, the booklet or netbooks in general don't fit in your pocket. And so MIMO is actually designed for a different point of the market, which we'll come back to later.
Yep, and even if they were to move to one of the more mature netbook Linux distributions, which is Ubuntu Netbook Remix, which I use, it is still fiddly, it's still a pain, you still need to put in massive incantations in the terminal just to keep the things going, and it's still very much a bug-ridden operating system where you have to put in your own workarounds. It's not consumer-ready, it's techie-ready, but it's not consumer-ready. Windows 7 will have the advantage of it has the Windows name. As Rafe has pointed out, the market has already spoken. It doesn't matter if you go, oh, that's because Microsoft undercut the prices and forced them to do it. It doesn't matter. The market has spoken. Netbooks mean Windows for the majority of people. Windows 7 is designed to use netbooks, and I suspect a lot of the battery power savings. I get 7 hours out of my Asus. So I think getting to that 12 hours is going to be part of the Windows 7 optimized software, along with new technology in the device. It's an interesting play. Nokia are going to get a lot of information and resources about the mini laptop, maxi laptop, however you want, netbook, however you want to describe it. I don't think it's going to be a big seller. I think it's going to be in the order of 500,000 units over a year, maybe up to 1 million. But I think that the people that will use it will actually find it to be a very good device for what they need it to do. And that will be journalists, people who travel a fair amount, people who, I don't know, like to bounce around festivals and do a little bit of editing and work while they're out on an almost full-size keyboard. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on it, to be honest.
We can tell that, Ewan. You mentioned numbers there. Rafe, have we any idea on the price this is going to come in at?
No, we don't. This is one of the things that Nokia is going to reveal at Nokia World. If I had to guess, I would say it's probably going to be around the 500 euro mark, but it's very difficult to say. I mean, I'm expecting a slight premium over some netbooks simply because the design quality, I think, looks in the picture at least to be a bit high. I will have an opportunity to see it next week, and I'll be reporting back in more detail, because I know a lot of people see this as a fairly ideal companion device for a smartphone. I think Ewan's right. The size of the addressable market on this is questionable, but it is existing. And the reason it's existing is what I've talked about a lot in the last few podcasts, is this sort of merger between mobile phones, PC computers, mainly in the form of laptops, and the internet. And that's converging together into one space. And we're seeing various things emerge here. And the truth is, no one knows exactly how this is going to pan out. And there's things like the mid devices, Moblin from Intel, for example, the netbook push, and that's from Ubuntu, but also Windows 7, you know, essentially having a netbook version of Windows 7 in the sort of limited editions they're doing. And also you're seeing it coming up from the other way from Nokia on MIMO and the big news we had there this week. And so this sort of, if you like, it's an emerging market segment, but in another sense, it's just an evolution of what's gone before. But Nokia wants to be involved in this market because clearly they see it as a growth opportunity. And I think Ewan's right, some of the learnings they will get out of doing this will be very valuable going forward. Although I think it's probably fair to say this is not what Nokia sees as in its vision of the future in terms of mobile computing. That's probably closer to the other big announcement that we had this week, which we'll talk about later in the podcast. But I would draw out a few things about this booklet. I mean, we've already mentioned Nokia isn't calling it a netbook, but they have certainly applied the sort of Nokia design philosophy to it. You'll recognise some things like the power buttons on it, for example. It's going to ship with all the sort of Ovi software, and so it's also a strengthening of their Ovi service play, particularly in terms of it will ship with Ovi Suite, but there's also going to be bits of Ovi Maps, presumably Ovi Share as well. Ovi Files, we mentioned when we were talking about this amongst ourselves earlier this week, is sort of a cloud-based solution, and that's going to be quite compelling in terms of out-of-the-box. The stuff you'll get straight away is a significant value add to what you'd get with a sort of standard Windows netbook, and so I think there might be something there. And as I say, I know Ewan's a fan of the two-box solution, and I, you know, for a certain market, I think there's a lot of validity in that.
And it's almost so it's a two-box solution, but that the extra box of the phone is actually bundled inside the casing of the device, so it's a two style box, one box solutions, which is probably a lovely compromise. I just want to point out, in terms of the addressable market, Scion and Palm themselves for a long time lived in an addressable market of sub 1 million users in the UK. So you don't need to have massive numbers to create a good, strong, bubbling ecosystem for this sort of devices, especially if it's a lot of techies who are very loud and vocal and are quite happy to share stuff online. So it should be relatively easy to get this to the point where it does work nicely.
That's absolutely right. I mean, it will be a limited market, but as I say, I think it's the learnings that Nokia will get out of it in terms of understanding market. And also it's a side bet because, you know, we don't know. This kind of device may get much more popular. Certainly the indications thus far are netbooks. It's been a growth area for laptops, obviously, but relatively speaking, it hasn't, you know, gone out of this world. But, you know, having a sort of horse in the race is important, I think. And ultimately, what Nokia has been doing this week, very noticeably, is expanding the reach of its device portfolio. And in order to do that, it's had to go onto several new platforms. Again, we can talk about that later. So I think really the booklet is an opportunity for Nokia to expand its horizons, as is dictated by the evolution of the marketplace.
Yeah, very, very true. And before people think that we're all about Nokia, which has been suggested in the past, I just mention a few other platforms just to get some names in. The Samsung i9 HD, which we mentioned a firmware update that was imminent. Apparently, it's been delayed again, but we will keep you up to speed. The moment anything's released, we'll cover it in the news page of All About Symbian, of course. Rafe, is there any news at all of the Sony Ericsson Satio, the other big manufacturer flagship coming up?
I understand that this is due out relatively soon. We're sort of looking at around an October, possibly a November time period. And I've been onto them to sort of talk about some review devices. There's nothing to report yet, but I think it's fairly imminent. One of the things they have announced, for example, this week is they're now accepting S60 5th edition applications into their Play Now Arena, which is effectively their application store. So that's, okay, you know, sort of the signs are there, and there's more to come on that.
Okay. But in the meantime, back to Nokia. It is the week before Nokia World, of course. The second announcement by Nokia in the week was, in some ways, the most significant, for me at least. They announced what looks like the Nokia 5800, but in actual fact was the 5230. It's essentially the 5800 without Wi-Fi and with a downgraded camera. But the stunning thing is that the price, €149 before taxes and subsidies, so we'll see that on the streets, on pay-as-you-go for getting close to £100, I'm guessing. And that's stunning for a full S60 touchscreen smartphone with GPS, with all the Obi suite, all the 5th edition goodness. The only thing that's missing is Wi-Fi, and you get it on pay-as-you-go for £100 with no contract, no commitment. I think that's stunning.
I think the exciting thing that we're going to see about the 5230 is if you take all the sales of the booklet, all the sales of the N900, and potentially all the sales of whatever other high and medium end devices are going to come out of Nokia World, the 5230 is going to outsell all of them. Agree or disagree, Steve?
Not so much this one particular model, but I think that Nokia is expanding what was just the one model, the 5800. It's fairly plasticky, but it's got an awful lot of functionality and a very nice phone size form factor. And they've taken this one model, and now they've effectively got three different models at different price points with different focuses and different spec levels. And between the three of them, I think they'll easily keep up the million a month and perhaps get up toward the 2 or even 3 million a month by the end of the year.
It's also probably going to be an S60 phone. Certainly in the UK, is going to be available for free on a contract, given that pricing. I mean, you're talking about £70 to £80 in pay-as-you-go. I think it'll go sub 100 to sell, and I think in the pay on the monthly market, this will be free on a very low tariff. And again, that's only going to be able to help the sales.
Yeah. Rafe had to just disappear to pick up something from the postman. But Rafe, we're just talking about the 5230 and being impressed by the pricing. You were very impressed by this, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I mean, I think this is just a demonstration of how Nokia is trying to push down the price of its smartphone devices so that they can ship their services on them. And Nokia's future strategy is essentially dictated around not making money from device sales, although of course that's will continue to be very important, but actually making money from consumers after the point of purchase, and that's done through its Obi services. And for all the excitement we get about the high-end devices, or even the mid-tier devices, you know, when we're talking about services, it's actually the mass-market devices that sell in sort of the millions, i.e., you know, looking at the 100, 200 million devices that Nokia sell, sort of in the, you know, high-low-tier to mid-mid-tier device range, if you like, that those services are going to run on where you'll have the potential to make the most money. In terms of revenue per user, it may be less, but because there's so many of those users, the overall profit there will be greater. And up until now, we've really been predictated on a mobile device market that's about making money out of the device hardware. And that's certainly reflected in the high-end devices where RIM and Apple and Nokia and all the other manufacturers make most of their profits on. So the top 10% of their devices, obviously in Apple's case, they're all high-end devices, and same with RIM, which is why they have such healthy profits. But that will change in time, I think, because, you know, today's high-end device becomes commoditized tomorrow. And to a certain extent, the high-end smartphones have put that time off. When we look at the average, you know, £30 or whatever bog-standard handset, that's totally commoditized now. That will happen more, and services will become more important, which is why Nokia's transformation into a service company is so important, and incidentally is why Symbian as a platform, despite the moves that have been made this week, actually remains very center of Nokia's future, simply because services are the most important, and services running on Symbian devices are sort of the key to Nokia's future revenue.
Yeah. It's worth noting that the 5230 comes in six colours, just for a change. I think Nokia are finally getting their, as their marketing department called it, their paint box out. Red, pink, blue, yellow, silver and dark silver.
And yet again, the original N-Gage Classic is leading the way. We had these completely interchangeable covers many, many years ago. It was so far ahead of its time.
When I were a lad.
I thought it was a gimmick.
Well, yeah. The Express on covers of early Nokia phones are one of their most popular things, which is why we saw them reappear on something like the N79. And the truth is, actually, the styling and the ability to customize a phone is still what sells more than anything else, rather than sort of technical capabilities or included services. You know, you don't walk into a shop and say, I want to have a phone that runs OviMap. You walk into a phone, oh, I like the look of that. How much is it? How much will it cost me on my contract? And as you were
can
saying...
I get it in pink?
Yeah, and as you were saying, this is also for the pay-as-you-go market, where those kind of things, I think, if anything, are even stronger, where, you know, there's less knowledge about the technology, to put it politely. But that doesn't mean it's not important to appeal to that market. And that's what's so interesting about this 5230. I mean, Ewan said it, you know, under £100 on pay-as-you-go, it's really quite revolutionary. And it's, you know, when you're talking about having all the stuff it's got in it, I mean, basically everything you'd expect from the high-end devices apart from Wi-Fi, really is a quite remarkable achievement.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned talking a lot about services there. There's a whole new Nokia service that's also been announced. This was the announcement, I think, on Wednesday. Nokia Money, which is, as far as I can see, is kind of a PayPal-like system, but with a focus on world sales. Rather than being focused on the Western world, this is kind of aimed more at the developing world. And it's been pointed out in Nokia's press release that there are 4 billion mobile phones in the world, but only 1.6 million bank accounts, leaving 2.4 billion people potentially as customers for Nokia Money. Rafe, you were looking at this in detail. You thought it was the biggest announcement of the week, but why
is
that?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think this announcement has been terrifically underrated in some circles. Why is it important? Well, because this could become a central tenet of Nokia's service future, and the numbers we're talking about are absolutely enormous. You know, you look at the credit card companies like Visa or MasterCard or whatever, and they make their money by taking a small amount off each transaction, and potentially Nokia Money could do exactly the same thing. And mobile phones are one of the devices you always have with you, and, you know, along with your wallet and key. So why not combine in some of the money functions? And I think that's just as applicable in the developed world, or especially when you start combining it with things like the NFC technology, which is basically the same thing you get in the Oyster cards on the London Tube system, you know, wirelessly swipe to pay for something. But as you hinted there, it is the developing world that is perhaps most significant. You know, the so-called unbanked, which may have problems accessing, you know, bank accounts because there's, you know, they live in a rural area, or simply, you know, they don't may not be of any fixed address. People also, you know, have to think about the circumstances in the developing world. Maybe no power. no fixed address. And that's when this sort of thing starts to become very interesting, just as Ovimail has done best in the developing world.
How does it actually work? They mention voice and SMS in the press release, and they don't mention data, which is intriguing. So presumably, I want to pay you. My phone knows who I am. There are various identifiers. And so I send an SMS, and your phone recognizes me as previously having done a transaction. And how does that information then get to Nokia, who keep the actual balances? Do we know?
We don't actually know much of the implementational details yet. We're going to hear more at Nokia World. It's a common refrain on this week's podcast. okay. Essentially, yes, there will be a phone number that you phone up, and in the text message, you'll probably send it through maybe even a small client application or to a specific number with the phone number of the other person you're paying. And I think probably the thing to realise here is it's actually the service back end that's important. Clearly, how effective it is and how well it works will obviously have a very big impact on the success, but it'll probably depend on the individual market and the individual handset. You can imagine in the high-end handsets that may well have something like NFC, or you know, are able to support you know, a proper application. And of course, S60 is increasingly in a number of the handsets in the mid portfolio, a web runtime application that ties in with the service in some way. And so I can envisage it being both an online element, but at its most basic, it will be powered by SMS and voice, and it will be effectively send £100 to person X or pay my utility bill. It can also be used for sort of micropayments for things like cinema tickets or a bottle of water. What gets interesting there in the implementation is how small a cut is Nokia willing to take on small transactions, because I think that will have a large impact on its success, particularly in the sort of the Western markets. And in terms of actually loading up your account, there's going to be Nokia money agents, as they're being termed, set up all around the world, certainly in the countries where this is going to launch. I imagine Nokia, as with other services, will roll it bit by bit. But these could be your local phone shop where you can go and deposit or withdraw money. I think that's probably more relevant in the countries where people don't have bank accounts, i.e. again, the emerging economies. And they'll set up a whole line of networks, and India is a very good example of this, and I think this will be one of the key markets for Nokia Money, where Nokia has a fantastic distribution system, which is why they're the market leader, really, in that country. Also have a very strong trusted brand. They're the number one trusted brand in India. So they're kind of in an ideal position to offer this kind of service, because they have a distribution network in place and the trust as well. There are obviously a lot of what-ifs in this, how they actually set it up, how effective it is. You know, Nokia don't have the best track record for launching services. One only needs to look back to something like the Ovi Store. But I think, you know, the reason I'm so interested in this is, longer term, it could be fantastically valuable for the company. And this isn't just limited to Nokia phones. It could potentially run across any mobile phone. But it you know, reinforces Nokia as a service company. So that's why, for me, it's bigger than any one device or indeed any one sort of platform announcement, because this is something that will be with us for years to come.
And it's worth pointing out that the company behind it, I mean, Nokia invested in some $70 million in the company that's driving this OboPay some 4 years ago. So it's not as if they're going from a standing start. They've had a lot of groundwork played in on this. I mean, yes. To go back to that Ovi Store, there will be people making jokes about, oh, I can't give you any money because my firmware is the wrong thing. But this has been a long time in development, and you know, it will have a limited rollout because there are financial implications, financial acts to follow, and they will be different in every single country. So this will be targeted to places. To be honest, I expect India to be the first place to actually pick this up, and then possibly America as well. But I've actually got a lot of confidence in this project that it will work. For start, because it's the financial markets, it's going to be so well regulated and watched over by the authorities that Nokia won't be able to, you know, cock it up in their delightfully Finnish way that they do with some other products and services that they've launched.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, Ewan. I mean, one of the things that's worth pointing out here is the regulatory framework in terms of the financial services is very complicated, which means Nokia will have to set it up on a country-by-country basis. It was interesting to note in the press release, you know, they mentioned OboPay, but they said this would be an open framework, which would be open to other service providers. And clearly, there's going to be a need to partner with local banks and local operators. And so the rollout of this won't be necessarily as fast as something like the Nokia Music Store, which incidentally launched in India this week and has had the fastest ever rollout for a digital music store anywhere in the world from any company. But this is sort of a long-term project, if you like. And so getting those kind of agreements in place will be complicated, which is one of the reasons they've partnered with OboPay, who have an existing wholly owned subsidiary in India and also have a US operation. And I'm sure they'll be looking to leverage that. But there are other companies around who do this sort of thing. And so when Steve said there's kind of a PayPal, well, yes, it's a PayPal service in one sense for sending money, but actually they are looking to provide all the basic financial services, so it's a bit more than PayPal, but it's also a framework in which lots of little PayPals all dotted around the world could mobilize themselves using Nokia as kind of the big brand to push it in. And I think Nokia realized that they're not going to do this without partners. You know, when we talk about the flows of money potentially, you only have to look at, you know, credit card companies, you know, this could be a very significant source of revenue. And it's not quite a license to print money, but if you can set up the costs and get the economies of scale going on that sort of thing, just as, you know, Visa can makes a lot of money, I think Nokia could do very well here, especially when in a few years' time you start talking about combining it more integrally with the devices, and that is stuff like the NFC I was talking about earlier. And you can actually make it, you know, the test of a service to me, is it better than doing it another way? And in the, you know, for us guys, it's probably not going to be initially very particularly useful for going out and buying your cinema tickets. You know, you'll have to make an effort to do it rather than pulling out your wallet. But, you know, think in 5 years' time, you've got a phone that's got a Nokia Money account attached to it that's directly attached to your bank account or your credit card in some way, and all you need to do is swipe it over as you would with an Oyster card. At that point, the barriers are such that it becomes better than using your wallet, and therefore the service starts to take over in your daily lifestyle. And that's why I'm so interested in it, because, you know, obviously it goes without saying that money's kind of fundamental to the way we live our lives. And, you know, we're not in a Star Trek utopia yet. And so in terms of potential, there's an awful lot there.
Yeah. One thing that does worry me, of course, is security. I'm obviously details will come out next week. But, for example, you steal someone's phone. Can you then send a message to say, send £10,000 to your own phone from that person's Nokia Money account via SMS? I imagine there's got to be some kind of password system, or, as you say, a client that kicks off the SMS, which itself accepts a password.
Absolutely. I mean, these are the sort of implementational details that I hope to hear more about next week at Nokia World. And clearly, there's a very strong potential to go wrong, and I think Nokia will have to be careful not to sort of create any bad first experiences, because that can be, you know, fatal to any service. As I think we've seen a little bit with OviStore, this is obviously on a completely different scale, and the scope of this is much wider. But yes, the kind of implementational details, and I said it needs to be easier to use than whatever the alternative method is, and the fact is, why it's important in the developing countries is sort of the barrier to get over that mark is lower in the emerging economies than it is in sort of the Western world. So yes, you're absolutely right. Security, actually how it works, how easy it is to use, those are which will dictate success or failure, just because it's got the potential. The proof will be in how they actually do it.
Yeah. Okay, as we mentioned at the start of this podcast, Nokia has taken this the last week, as you listen to this, to significantly increase the range of platforms it covers in terms of its span, from the smallest phones to almost a laptop form factor. The one in the middle, if you like, was released on Thursday at the N900, running MIMO 5. I'll just run through some of the basic specifications. I'm sure both Rafe and Ewan have got opinions. We've got a few reader questions should they run short of ideas. But the basic specifications are pretty impressive. ARM Cortex A8 600 MHz processor with 1 gigabytes of application memory. That's only 256 megabytes of actual RAM, which is still good enough. And 768 megabytes of virtual memory. If you looked at the demonstration videos that were up with the launch story, you can see some pretty staggering transitions between different desktops, different live desktops, and I can see why all this RAM is going to be needed. There's a huge amount that's going to have to be running at the same time, and that will have another implication, which I'll mention in a moment. 3.5-inch wide screen, so it's a bit smaller than the existing N810, N800, which we've also got and known for a few years. 800 by 480 pixels resolution. It's resistive touch, which is disappointing to some, but as many people have pointed out, resistive is more accurate and can be used with gloves on, e.g. in Finland in winter. Dimensions-wise, it's just a bit bigger than the N97. It's a chunky beast in terms of weight, 181 grams. That's definitely in the extreme upper end of what people will acceptably use as a phone. But, of course, as a all-purpose internet tablet, they can perhaps make that compromise. Horizontal slider form factor is a three-line QWERTY keyboard, very similar to the N97s, or it looks to have slightly more defined keys and have better physical physical feedback. It's got a kickstand, all the specs, including Wi-Fi, HSDP, as you might expect. 5-megapixel camera looks pretty identical to the N97s. Video capture is at WVGA, 800 by 480, which is the first for Nokia, at 25 frames a second. Looking forward to trying that out. GPS, of course, FM transmitter, of course, 3.5mm output, TV out, micro USB, 32 gigabytes of internal flash, the same as the N97, plus the micro SD again. Now, this is the kicker. This is the controversial one for me, at least. It's got a 1320 milliamp hour battery. Now, that will be ample for almost any S60 smartphone, apart from maybe the N97. But considering what this thing is designed to do in terms of maintaining all these programs running at once, all these desktops running at once, video, internet, non-stop, I don't think 1320 milliamp hours is going to be enough. And I think that Nokia have got some serious optimization to do, and also that there's going to be a pretty large market in aftermarket batteries. So with that one caveat from me, let's go to opinions. Ewan, do you want to take your opinion first?
For all the specs, for all the lovely stuff that's there, people are going to go, ooh, things move around on the screen shinily. And that will convince them to buy this over any other phone. Look, I'm not going to argue that the N900 is style over substance, because it is a very substantive phone, as we've heard from the spec list there. But at the same time, Nokia have done something that the S60 community for a long time have asked them to do, which is to update the user interface. Now, that alone is going to get people talking about it. And also, because it is Linux MIMO, because it is a phone, and because it's a high-end, it's not going to be Symbian, there are going to be a lot of people out there who will go, oh, this is Nokia who are getting rid of Symbian. They're going to destroy S60 and this will take over the world. Well, one, that's Linux heads talking, and we've already talked about how fiddly Linux can be. I still have a trepidation about how well the adoption rate will be on this device. Once all the techies have bought it, will the consumers like that? And also the battery. I've just digged out the N810 that I have here, and it had a 1500 milliamp hour battery. So the N900 is going to do more with less, which kind of breaks the laws of physics. I'm sure that people will find stuff to moan and bitch about on this one. I suspect that, oh, it's a resistive touchscreen and not a capacitive touchscreen will be something that the American and iPhone fans will latch onto as well. But in terms of battery life, if this thing gets 5 or 6 hours and makes it comparable to the iPhone when the iPhone is doing actual computing tasks, then I think that will be acceptable in the market. So I'm not too fussed about short battery life, although it would be nice to see something that had the amount of time that an E75 can last for. Again, this is something you're going to need to get your hands on to see what the interface is like. It's great that it's nice and it's shiny, and hopefully that there's sort of lessons here. Maybe the sort of interface that we're going to see replicated in Symbian to the Power 2 or Symbian to the Power 4 using Qt as the driving engine. You know, it is almost like the S60 at 5th edition is approaching the end of line, the old workhorse warhorse that you bring out for one last glorious mission in a Tarantino-esque ball of cursing and fire, in which case the N97 is quite obviously Pam Grier. And the N900 is going to be the new vanguard of movies, and we will just have to wait another year until we see the inglorious bastard that will be Symbian to the Power 2. But until now, MIMO looks quite nice.
I think rumours of Symbian's demise, they're a tiny bit exaggerated, Ewan, but I do take your...
What, how many other literary clichés can we get in on that one? It was the best of Symbian, it was the worst of Symbian. How about that?
Yeah, we're going to have an entertainment quiz based on this podcast later on for the listeners. And now this runs MIMO, not a Symbian, obviously, MIMO 5. And my question to Rafe is, first of all, how are we going to cover devices like this? Or have you got any plans for our site? And what are we going to cover? And also, what are your opinions on the impact this device will have?
Okay, so I guess I can address the easy question first. And what are we going to do in order to cover this device? Well, obviously, it's going to get a few mentions on All About Symbian, particularly in its early life when we're covering it at Nokia World. And obviously, the audience for a device like this is not dissimilar to the audience we already have for All About Symbian, despite the fact that Symbian stretches over a great deal of devices. I suspect much of our audience is at the higher end, despite our efforts to expand things. So I can tell you that All About MIMO.com will be coming along very shortly indeed. And initially, the plan is to provide sort of news and views in the sort of period before the device's release, which is actually surprisingly soon. It's going to be in October, and then continuing to provide an All About Symbian-like service and coverage going forward. We're obviously thinking about exactly how that's going to work, and there'll be more details, I guess, in future podcasts and on the site itself. Clearly, there's opportunity to link between the two because there's going to be commonalities in terms of Ovi services, and we'll be featuring key content on each site, on both sites. So more on that shortly. What do I actually think of it as a device and as a phone and the strategy? What's the implications here? Well, that's a harder question to answer. But I think the first thing is it's not a phone. It's a mobile computing device. And this is a very important distinction, which so Nokia hinted at in their press release when they said it's an evolution of the internet tablet platform. And it's what I was talking about earlier, is this sort of migration and convergence of mobile phones, laptops and internet into sort of a single space to almost create a new market segment, which is, if you like, the super duper micro computing phone, internet whizzy, shiny with plenty of transitions. That's terribly exciting to a kind of techies who are sort of have live and breathe technology. But for the average person, it's probably more than they'll need to handle at this point in time. Where the market will move in a few years' time is more open to debate. But I think the truth is a lot of people will be, you know, very satisfied with just a phone. And so how I draw the distinction here was MIMO and the N900 is a data-centric or a computer-centric device first and then a phone, whereas the Symbian smartphones have typically been a phone, a smartphone, and then a computing device. And the kind of the multimedia computer angle fits somewhere in between those two. And clearly with a device like the N97, it's erring more towards the computing side, but I think the phone usage is still centric. I mean, we can talk about one-handed versus two-handed use, and I think really looking at the UI from what I've seen so far, there's lots of unanswered questions, and MIMO is really about two-handed use, and it's mobile computing centric, and that is, you know, a very important distinction to make, because this actually changes the market of the device. Now, why have Nokia used MIMO as opposed to Symbian? Because there's nothing wrong with the Symbian operating system, but really the problem here is with the S60 UI, and Nokia didn't put the investment in necessary to be able to sort of let it evolve in this way. Is it even possible? Now, that's an interesting question, I think, because S60 is already hugely more flexible than MIMO, and that's going to be a controversial statement, but it reaches from the sort of the upper low tiers through the mid tier to the high-end devices. And you know, just because we've got MIMO, this doesn't mean we won't see any more high-end devices. The E-series, for example, are all going to be Symbian powered, and we're talking about the N900. There'll be probably another MIMO device in 9 months time or so, and there'll be more going forward into 2011. But relatively speaking, MIMO is going to be, you know, assuming the best happens and Nokia find out all the bugs and it goes well, it's probably going to be sort of a platform that we look to sell in the tens of millions of devices a year versus Symbian, which will be doing hundreds of millions. And as I mentioned earlier, there's that service strategy. Just turning to the device itself, I'd actually say the N900, all the attention is on the software, understandably. In terms of design, I'm not terribly excited by it. I mean, really, they've done a nice job, it looks like, on the materials, and it'll be interesting to see what the build quality is like. But really, this is kind of an E75, so there isn't anything particularly innovative in the design. The N97 is a piece of hardware, I would say, is sort of a better design. That sort of flip-up you know, clamshell design is really nice, and I think works better than the simple slide out. And then a slightly interesting statement, when you actually think about what the N900 can do versus what something like the N97 or the N86 can do, if you boil it down to the actual things they're capable of, there isn't all that much difference. I mean, sure, there's some difference in the high resolution video or the bigger screen for web browsing, but when it comes to it, carrying out certain tasks can be done on all of the devices. And so, you know, the emphasis here is how much of a difference is there beyond the kind of the shiny stuff in the software? And I suspect it may be smaller than most people realize. Of course, the thing about MIMO is that this is designed to be the first step in an evolving thing for Nokia. And so, you know, it's a mobile computing platform rather than, you know, a phone platform. And, you know, I do think that distinction is important. And, of course, it's worth pointing out that none of these things are going to stand still. So MIMO is going to continue to evolve, and it's deliberately designed to be mobile computing pocketable, and that's a certain segment. But we'll also see Symbian, you know, Ewan's already mentioned Symbian 4, that will be due sort of early 2011 essentially, and that will probably see a refreshing of the UI there, and the difference between them will suddenly seem I think smaller. But we've already talked about the price range, and we had the 150 euro S60 device this week, and we're talking about 500 euros for MIMO. I don't really see that changing. And of course, once you sort of have more parity on the UI, which will happen in years, in terms of people saying that's a good UI or that's a bad one, a lot of it will then become more about sort of the power to do things. And for a lot of people, something like, you know, the 5800, as it's already proved as a bestseller, is perfectly sufficient. And it's all very well for us to say we want the latest and greatest, but, you know, device cost is a very important factor. You know, if everyone could afford anything they wanted, presumably a lot of people would have ended up with iPhones, since everyone seems to agree they're the best things since sliced bread. But there's a limited market. The bigger market is still the mass market. And the question that's interesting to me is, will the mobile market be dominated in terms of profitability by these high-end devices that have the better margins? Or will there be a sort of emphasis on services? You know, we're looking at a few years' time, and that reflects what I was saying earlier in the podcast. So I think this is tremendously interesting. I'm really looking forward to finding out more. But I would caution people that, you know, this is, you know, early stage. We're just talking about one device. And although it's, you know, going to be popular amongst people who listen to this kind of podcast or read the sites, it's not necessarily the revolution people think it is. And, you know, I draw a parallel with the iPhone that got an enormous amount of hype and clearly had an important impact in the industry. And incidentally, I think the N900 is Nokia's true competitor to the iPhone, because I put the iPhone in that same mobile computing rather than phone category. And so going forward, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. So there's some of my thoughts, much more to come. And I will be writing in some detail about Nokia's platform strategy and how things are going to go. But yes, we're no doubt going to see the headlines about how Symbian is no good for X, Y, and Z. That's, you know, clearly doesn't understand the subtleties and the complexities of the situation, quite apart from the fact, as I say, it's this service-led future comes in. But yes, of course, you know, the fact that Nokia is not using Symbian in its high-end devices, I think, is a big, big deal. But actually, it's not so much reflections of the failings of Symbian OS, possibly the failings of S60, but it's really a reflection of the fact that Nokia is extending its portfolio into areas where it hasn't gone before, or indeed anyone's really gone before. And this sort of new emerging segment, of course, it's still part of the same continuum of devices that we've always had, but it's the way the future is evolving. How big is that going to be? How interesting is it going to be? What are we going to be able to do with it? Those are the questions I'm interested in. And I think, you know, just as with smartphones, it will be it's very important not to sort of expect it to happen all at once. We're talking about something that's going to take 5-6 years at least. Even then, I suspect, you know, who knows how the various software platforms will evolve. Essentially, what Nokia is going to be doing is making their phones platform agnostic, in that they'll be able to use Symbian, or they'll be able to use MIMO, and maybe even something else in the future. And it's the sort of service stuff that runs on top, and the programming layers like Qt, for example, but also widgets with web runtime, they'll run across them. That's, you know, that layer, if you like, the value layer, is really above the OS now. Yeah. And the UI is important, as we'll see the redevelopments in Symbian 4, and of course the emphasis on MIMO on flashiness. But really, it's about serving and creating mobile over a much bigger area than we've ever seen it before. It's not just about mobile phones. These are the devices that will be your digital heartbeat going forward. In the short term, I actually expect the ideal combination to be something like the N900, maybe coupled with the E52 or the E72, maybe with a netbook as well, and then a desktop computer. You know, that's what geeks will really be after. And this whole one box that can do everything, I'm doubtful of, because as you say, you know, it's a heavy device, and I don't expect that to change.
It does sound like you're going to have a whale of a time next week, Rafe. There's all those thoughts buzzing around your head and all these different keynotes. Well, and
every single press officer from all the companies, every single press officer from all the companies is now listening to this and going, must avoid Rafe.
Yes, well, there you go. I'm sorry. It's in my head, you know, this has been going on in my mind for the last year or so, even longer. And it's really exciting that this is now happening. And, you know, some people say we've had a bit of a lull. I think there's been plenty going on. But this is going to make the industry that we write about incredibly interesting over the next 5 years. And it's only going to become more important in people's lives. And, you know, in one sense, there's never been a more exciting time.
Yeah, we got a couple of really questions to squeeze in the last 30 seconds of the show. World of Nokia say via Twitter, they are saying, what are we hoping to be announced next week? Well, we've had most of the big announcements, but I still feel that there's one more device to be announced at the conference, but I'm not going to even speculate on that now, because that's Rafe for Rafe to share the news. Rafe has been invited over to Stuttgart to Nokia World and will be on the ground reporting with photos, videos and text. And Ewan and I will be manning the office. Manfully, as it were. And
Manning manfully the office. Neddy, come quick.
Well, and also Guam Guy asks, are we going to cover tween phones and all about Symbian, like the Nokia Surge? Yes. The 6670.
That's Ewan's job, because he's a representative of the tween market, because he's got painted nails.
Sorry, I thought it's because I sounded a bit like Jake from the Tweenies, but there we go. If anybody from AT&T is listening, get us a review unit.
Well, it's going to be launched over here in Europe in the 6760, which is essentially the same phone.
But it would be interesting to compare the European version, the 67, blah, 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 and the AT&T Surge version, because software is key going forward. I love the fact it looks like an old pager. It's retro enough. It's kind of 7650-ish. I want to see the software on it as well. So, yes, looking forward to that.
Yes. So we're going to keep you and busy with that. But for the mat now, we are going to say goodbye, because we're completely over time, but it's been an exciting week. Goodbye from Ray Blandford.
Goodbye, everybody. Any questions for Nokia World, just drop them in an email and I'll do my best to get them answered.
And a goodbye from Ewan. And anything from the fringe for us?
Yes, I'd just like to say that Kerry Marks was robbed. Recently, the Dave TV channel, we have a TV channel in Britain called Dave, how crazy is that, ran a poll to find the funniest joke at the fringe, and in the process they also decided that Kerry Marks's, one of his jokes, was one of the worst in the fringe ever. And I would just like to point out that the following joke is actually very, very good and should not have got the bad thing. The joke was, I would not like to do any jokes about Michael Jackson in my set this year, because they all rely on puns and that would be bad.
Oh, yeah. I think we'll draw a line under the show here. If you want to catch us on online, all of it, Symbian.com, on Twitter, Steve Litchfield,
Ewan Spence,
no spaces, Ray Blandford, no spaces.
Maybe keep an eye out on www.allaboutmimo.com. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, bye for now.